This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. I'm here along with my co-host, Yuona June Thiessen, and her husband, Mark Thiessen, my brother, who's sitting in once again. Mark, we're going to have to make you a regular member of the group here.
Yay!
You just keep showing up. Wow. Anyway, today is Thursday, January 22nd, 2015, and on today's show, we thought we would do something a little bit different. We're going to look at the law of attraction as it applies to the movies, because as it turns out, of course, anything in life, law of attraction applies to, but recently, particularly for myself and for my wife, Louise, we've spent a fair amount of time over the last year or two trying to compile, so to speak, a list of movies that affect us most positively from a law of attraction perspective. And as I was thinking about some of those movies just this morning, I was thinking that would be a good topic for a show. So I ran it by Yuona. She thought it was great. So we're talking going to the movies today. So to get the whole thing started, I don't know about you guys, I've actually been mentally compiling a list of my favorite all-time movies, and I judge that list based on the effect that the movies have on me from a positive perspective. In other words, the more positive the movie is, the higher it is on my list.
Okay.
Now, I know that the standard rule, I think this is actually a law that Congress passed, but the standard rule is you run a top 10 from number 10 down to number 1. I don't like to follow the rules. So I figured I'm going to start with number 1 and work down to number 10.
Ah, okay. That way you can keep going.
That's right. Yeah, there's no limit at that point. You go from 10 to 1, it's like, okay, now what?
I know. Like, I saw an article that said the top 6 list, and I'm thinking, okay, they got to 5 and realized they missed somebody.
I wouldn't be surprised. That's probably what happened.
Maybe he has 6 fingers on his hand.
Oh, it was the mutant blogger. Okay. Anyway, number 1 movie on my list. This might be a little bit of a surprise to you or to members of the audience, but because this is not a movie that most people would say is a great movie, but it's number 1 on my list. Mm-hmm. That movie is called Dreamer. It came out about 2006. Starring Dakota Fanning as the lead character, a little girl who has a horse that her father, played by Kurt Russell, nurses back to health, and her grandfather, played by Kris Kristofferson, is kind of like her accomplice in crime, teaching her all about horses when her father doesn't want her to learn about horses. Anyway, they nurse this horse back to health, and the second half of the movie is just one good feeling scene after another.
Okay.
It's very, very powerful from a positive aspect point of view. I mean, one of the things I've always been frustrated about, particularly in the last few years, is how much negativity there is in movies, because it's just, they're loaded, absolutely loaded with violence and nastiness and dysfunctionality and all kinds of stuff. And Dreamer is one of the very few movies that has one really downer scene at the near the beginning where the horse breaks down in the middle of a race. And that basically sets up what goes on. So there's even a possibility that the horse is going to be put down. But doesn't happen. They nurse him back to health. Or nurse her back to health. Actually, it's a filly. And then they go on to win the Breeders' Cup. And the Breeders' Cup race is the end of the movie. And it's basically the climax and conclusion all wrapped up into one very, very exciting scene.
I see.
Now, this is a movie, interestingly enough, that according to the site RottenTomatoes.com, got panned by 30% of the people who saw it. So,
wow.
Actually, less than 70% thought it was a good movie, which I find to be a fascinating statement all by itself, because this is a very, very positive movie, and 30% didn't like a positive movie.
Well, you know what, as you were saying, that they're making less of these movies, that's the reason why, because they don't sell. And now Hollywood and other entities are only wanting to make movies that are guaranteed blockbusters, So
scare the heck out of them.
Right, exactly. that's what, you have to blow stuff up, as I say to Mark. If I see one more movie where they blow stuff up, I'm going to scream.
And they'll say, we got the right movie. She screamed.
I know, because we actually read an article where one of the top guys, I forgot, but he's involved in the movie industry, and he was commenting that basically movies where you don't have things being blown up is, you know, it's not going to do well, and so they're not interested in making those movies anymore. And they do even worse on an international market for some reason, you know, as an import from an export from the U.S. So people want to see American movies where things get blown up. That's it.
Well, things get blown up. They also are interested in stuff where there's massive sex scenes or nudity.
Of course.
They're interested in stuff where there are wars going on, so that stuff getting blown up. Fast car chase scenes, that's a big thing.
Yes.
You don't actually have to have anything blowing up, just as long as stuff screaming through the streets, basically, you know, doing
what
nobody would ever normally do in real day life without going to prison for a few years.
Yes. And I feel like that's been so played out. I mean, aren't there any creative people left anymore? Come on. That's been done over and over and over again, you know. But anyways, my favorite movie, one of my favorite movies, I have so many, I don't have one, but I always loved Shawshank Redemption. I can't talk now.
Oh, my. That's an interesting choice.
Yes, I just love that movie. I can watch it over and over again. And it just, I mean, there are no overt LOA themes in there, but the fact is, I know, the main one. Some people may think, yes, it's pretty obvious, but I think it could have been more obvious because he never really says anything.
Well,
He's such a, what kind of actor you would call that? Few words are spoken, basically. But he holds on to this dream of freedom. You know, he's in prison for, you know, killing his wife, which is a whole nother story. And if people haven't seen, I'm sure everybody's seen Shawshank Redemption by now. But anyways, his wife cheated on him, and
we'll put out a spoiler alert here.
Right, in this pit of fashion. I can't talk. Pit of fashion. I said pit of fashion.
That's most department stores, pit of fashion.
Anyway, so he's in prison, but for 20 years he holds on to this dream, ideal, goal, whatever it is, objective of freedom. And this is definitely spoiler alert. He actually digs his way out with a spoon. I mean, I just find that incredible. That to me is very much about, you know, holding on to some, you know, thing that you want to accomplish and going about it every day, little by little, until it's actually accomplished. So I really like that movie a lot.
Definitely a fight for freedom.
Yes.
Not
but it talks about, you know, the power of holding a thought in your mind and kind of, you know, ignoring all else because, you know, it seems almost impossible. You know, he was in prison for life and all he had was a spoon. Not very much. But somehow he found a way.
And I guess that is a very important theme. In fact, as you said that last bit, it resonated with me because something I've been trying to wrestle with and overcome lately is my own tendency to allow myself to be distracted, not to be so single-minded, you know, not picking just the thing I want to focus on, just the positives I want to focus on and sticking to that. It's amazing how good our environment is at distracting me.
Yes.
I mean, really, it's really good at it. It's much better at it than I am at holding my own thought, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
The world we live in is designed to distract us.
Exactly. It's built on that. It's built on material, commercial, getting you to focus on what they want you to focus on. So there's a whole billion-dollar industry built on distraction.
Well, I just would like to report to the marketers who are out there, it's working. No, seriously. I mean, it's something that I've really been noticing lately to almost the extreme. And if nothing else, just noticing it as much as I have has helped me to focus, believe it or not, which is a very strange thing. But it really has. The more that I notice it, the more that I'm almost accosted by it, I'm becoming more and more – it's like I'm digging my heels in. You know, I'm just being more resistant to, I am not going to let you grab my attention away.
Yes. And I think that's the beginning of developing your focus muscles, that point of awareness. And the more often that happens, the more you get to exercise those muscles and the stronger they become. And I remember seeing a meme on Facebook where it was a picture of a Chinese or some Asian country, and there was a child practicing meditation, and the caption said something about, when we did this, there was no such thing as ADD. And I thought that was interesting. You know, there was a time when kids were taught how to focus and how to, you know, discipline and, you know, concentrate on one thing and really focus, learn how to strengthen their powers of focus, basically. And that the opposite is happening now. Now there's so much to distract the kids that their focus muscles are almost non-existent.
It's probably overkill to ask a question like this, but have you seen any scientific studies along these lines that reinforce what we're talking about?
Yes, there are scientific studies. Yes, there. You know, of course, there are studies that talk about whether it's television or video games and those kinds of things, but definitely those have led to increased ADD and those kinds of issues. But on the opposite direction, there are studies now that are being done where they're teaching kids to meditate in their own kid-like way, whatever fashion, but to learn to meditate so that they can learn to control their minds. And they're using this on children who have issues with focus, especially kids who have ADD or ADHD or any of those types of issues, behavioral issues. They are learning how to take back control of their minds and so not be so easily affected by what's happening around them. And it's working. And Mark and I were talking about that. This is not in the field of science and research, but something like the practice of martial arts is actually quite effective in helping young boys especially learn how to control themselves and learn how to not be so easily distracted.
Well, it certainly makes sense in the sense that martial arts in general have, over the last 20 years or so, become incredibly popular, not just among the young, but among adults as well, to the point where you could probably point at any 100 people in the population, and there's a good bet that at least 20 or 30 of them have practiced some form of martial arts.
Yeah.
So that would make a lot of sense to me that, first of all, that it has that much effectiveness, and second of all, that it's being recognized. People are putting it to use. They may not be thinking of it in terms of being able to focus, but I would think subconsciously there's at least something going on there.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, there's both conscious and subconscious, but a lot of the parents are wanting alternatives to the medication.
Right.
It's really, really dangerous, some of them.
You know, speaking of being able to focus well, and really focusing on your goal, one of my other movies on my list, actually it's number 3 on my list, features a lead protagonist who is all about focusing on her goal, and that movie is Secretariat. The protagonist I have in mind is the woman who owns Secretariat, and a large portion of the movie is about how she basically, against all odds, against her family's wishes, basically, everybody she knew was advising her not to take the steps she was doing, and she just kept following her own lead, following her own sense of what had to be done, step after step after step, and those steps made it possible for that horse to become a Triple Crown winner and quite possibly the most successful racehorse of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I have a few movies like that on my list because those movies really speak to the power of holding a vision and not being swayed by others or circumstances. And especially like some of the movies I had in mind for those included The Aviator, Apollo 13, and more recently one that's in the theaters right now, Selma. And all the lead characters in this movie held ideals of circumstances that had not existed previously. You know, Aviator flying faster than anyone else, and Apollo going to somewhere, you know, going to the moon, and for our Martin Luther King Jr., you know, fighting for the equal rights of African Americans. None of those things existed, and yet they could see it in their mind's eye and hold on to those ideals so strongly that even when other people were saying, you know, that's impossible, or it won't happen in your lifetime, or you are aspiring to too much too soon, they held on to it and they believed in it, and they were willing to give everything they have, even risking their lives for those ideals. So yeah,
that's
definitely
right.
There's a lot of LOA in those types of movies.
And in fact, you mentioned Apollo 13 and going to the moon, probably the even greater achievement made by the NASA team in the Apollo 13 experience was that at the time that the disaster happened, that there was the explosion of the oxygen tank, both tanks were damaged and so forth. At that time, the date that happened, which I believe was April 13, 1970, something like that, on that day and throughout that night, if you had polled the members of the NASA ground control team about whether or not they thought that they could get the ship back, you would have found a majority who said that they couldn't.
Yes, yes, definitely.
In fact, it was really only the leadership of Gene Kranz, the mission director, and a few others who were really pushing to say, look, we're going to make this happen, that really, it basically got everybody onto the same track, and they were all working feverishly to do whatever they could to figure out how to get this ship home safely, which they did, against all odds.
Right, and that's the thing about LOA, as it's exemplified in those movies, is that these people, and I'm thinking of Selma and Martin Luther King Jr., you know, Martin Luther King was jailed, and then there were, he was a minister of the gospel, and all his fellow ministers were saying, you know, this is not something that you should be doing.
Oh, yeah.
And they were quoting Bible text, and, you know, at one point things got worse before they got better, you know, the animosity between the African Americans and the law enforcement, it just degenerated where they were being beaten and tear gassed and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, in the movie, of course, it's, you know, they play on the emotions in those kinds of situation. And it showed where, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. actually was wondering if this was what he should do and if this is the path he should take. And, you know, he's putting the lives of these people in jeopardy, but, you know, he held on to the ideal that things needed to change and that he could do something about that. And I thought that was really a powerful lesson for all of us. You know, when you have an ideal and the reality around you seems to be pointing in the opposite direction, you know, you have to hold on. Because one thing about LOA is that when you are engaged in something that you believe in and you feel that you are at one with the universe, with God, with creation in your ideal, that you have to hold on to it. You just have to. You almost don't have a choice. It's either you do it or you die kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen the movie Selma, but I remember studying a great deal about King when I was younger. And the thing that struck me the most about King and all that was written about him and known about him and so forth is how fixedly he stuck to the idea that all Americans, regardless of skin color, could be free and equal. And that it could happen, he thought it could happen within his lifetime.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which was an astonishing view to have at that
point. It is, because, you know, we take it for granted now, but back then that was like going to the moon.
I would say it was probably even more than going to the moon, because at least going to the moon, you could scientifically lay out how to do every single step of the way,
true,
which they did.
Right.
You couldn't really do that with the civil rights movement.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was quite remarkable. And of course, the culmination of it was his speech on the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But that speech is often, the I Have a Dream speech, that's considered to be the peak of his career. But really, it was what his career had been leading up to, because he'd been making those statements over and over and over again. This is the first time he got to say it to this huge, massive audience. But it was the same thing he'd been saying over and over and
all
over.
All along, yes. He had made that speech before.
The phrasing of "I have a dream" may have been unique for that particular day, but the messages were absolutely identical to what he'd been saying for years. The other thing that caught me in what we're talking about was Apollo 13. One of the most amazing parts about that whole story is that after the explosion, they calculated that the spacecraft had a grand total of 15 minutes of battery life left.
Wow.
And they survived 4.5 days.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Wow.
I mean, that's just, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not to mention, very cold. Which they were. They were freezing cold. And to make matters worse, they survived, of course, by using the LEM module, which was going to supposedly land on the moon, but of course didn't get used for that, the Aquarius LEM module. They used that as a lifeboat. And what people don't realize is that module was so small that it didn't have any chairs in it. And it was only designed for two people. So three people spent time for 4 days with virtually no power, cramped into a space with no chairs. Well, of course, in space, you don't really care too much about chairs. But with no chairs and just enough room for two people, three people spent that much time cramped together like that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that experience in the face of wondering if you're going to die in the next couple of days of oxygen deprivation?
Or hours, yeah.
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 That took a serious mind control.
Serious mind control. I guess you could say it focused their minds tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They had to focus their minds or else they would lose it.
Yeah. So
it took a lot of courage and all that, but also faith, just like Martin Luther King. There was faith up there in space that, you know, maybe the guys down at ground control can really make this happen somehow. Even though it wasn't clear how. There's another movie that I like that actually shows the LOA experience without faith, which I think is interesting.
What's that?
That's Groundhog Day.
Oh. Interesting choice. Tell us about it.
Well, Bill Murray plays a guy who's very negative and grumpy all the time, and ends up doing it. He's a weather forecaster or weather reporter, whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess he's a forecaster as well. And he gets assigned to go to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, to report on Groundhog Day, and he gets stuck there through some twist of magic or whatever.
Some kind of a time warp thing.
Some sort of time warp, yes. And every day he wakes up, it's Groundhog Day all over again. And for most of the movie, he is at first taking advantage of it and having fun with it, but eventually it wears down on him, and he can't believe that he's stuck in this place that he hates. And he tries to kill himself. He basically takes all of his negative thinking to their logical extremes until he's just run out of ideas.
Negative ideas.
And then near the end of the movie, it finally dawns on him to try being nice and kind and helpful to people. And suddenly he goes, you know, this, I mean, he didn't say it, he just did it. But you could tell by the way he was reacting as he, took this on. I was like, well, you know, this is rather nice. I like this. And, of course, the LOA part is that as he did so, everything changed.
Yes. It broke the pattern, yeah.
And it ultimately broke the pattern, yes.
Right. But, yeah, it speaks to, again, something that's very much a part of LOA about perspective and perception and, attitude, how that makes such a huge difference, because here he was in this place that he hated so much he wanted to end his life, but then he changed his attitude, and everything changed, and which is what LOA teaches. You can be in the middle of heaven or in hell. It's up to you. It's up to you how you want to perceive it and how you want to approach it, and what your what the overriding thoughts running through your head, what those are. And that makes such a huge difference. And that's kind of the theme for a lot of movies, where there's all this turmoil and chaos and everything's going bad until the lead character has like a epiphany and this suddenly changes their attitude, and then things change as a result. You know, they're still living in the same place, in the same situation with the same people, but the whole environment changes because now they have changed.
Isn't it interesting how, despite the fact that the law of attraction is resisted as a concept and even denied by a large chunk, I would say it's fair to say a majority of the population, and yet in the movies it plays such a prominent role without them even noticing it?
Yes, it does so much. You know, we were thinking about just something like It's a Wonderful Life. Now,
yes,
everybody's seen that movie, but that's LOA classic.
Mm-hmm.
Classic LOA.
It is. It is.
You know,
in every aspect of the whole thing, including the wealth part.
Yes, yeah, definitely, yeah.
That's true.
In fact, I believe the final message that Clarence, the angel, gives to Jimmy Stewart's character is that no one is a failure who has friends. Referring, of course, to the fact that all his friends came to the rescue when there was the run on the bank and there wasn't enough money to cover the bank's requirements, and all his friends came in and just dumped all their money on the table for him.
Yeah.
So there's even the monetary side of it.
That's right, which is very much part of LOA.
Another movie on my list that kind of plays along the theme of somebody who had to have focus and how focus changed their entire life around is the movie The Blind Side.
Oh, yes.
Because here you have a kid from the projects whose dream is not to play football, interestingly enough. He wants to be the next Michael Jordan.
Right.
He wants to play basketball, be a hoop star. But, of course, his build kind of precludes that. He's much more suited to be an offensive lineman, and that's what he ends up being all the way up to the NFL, where he wins a Super Bowl ring with the Ravens. But
yeah,
the movie doesn't actually tell that part of the story. It simply tells the story of him as he's in his teens, and he is taken in by a family in Memphis, where he lived, a very wealthy family who was a sports-minded family, and yet the sports was a secondary part of the story. I mean, there's actually two different stories here. There's the story as told by the movie and the story as told in the book. And I've actually read the book. The book is also good and different in
yes.
that it tells the story a bit differently, and the perspective of the characters who are involved and so forth is quite different from the way portrayed in the movie. Both are good. Both,
yes.
I think, actually play out the LOA roles very nicely. I guess I just really like the book because it shows so many aspects, so many details about all the little tiny ways that Michael himself and even the people around him had to keep focusing on what they wanted and just excluding from their mind the things that they didn't want in order to keep moving ahead. It happened over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah,
that's remarkable.
The mom in that story, Mrs. Tui, she definitely, whether consciously or subconsciously, is she practices LOA, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because she saw this kid and, the way I see it, because we read the book as well, you know, she kind of sees not people, not who what they are, but what they can be, you know, the potential.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, doesn't have necessarily be a sports superstar, but she just saw that he was capable of more than he was living under his present circumstances, and she offered to do that for him. And according to the book, you know, he was not the first or the only child that she'd done that before.
Right.
She was just that type of person. And so, yeah, it is a powerful story of focus, because, you know, him getting his high school diploma, that was, whoa.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah, but
interestingly enough, when they were casting for the movie,
mm-hmm.
they were trying to find the right actress to play Leanne Tui.
Yeah.
And they're having a lot of trouble with it. And Leanne herself recounted in an interview that I saw she recounted how they kept running these names by her and by her husband and so forth, and they would say, yeah, okay, that could be, that could be. And then someone mentioned Sandra Bullock, and she said, you know what, she could do it. But on the flip side, when Sandra was presented with the script and was presented with a character, she turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, she explained that the reason she turned it down is when they tried to explain the character to her, it didn't make sense to her. She didn't know how to play the character. It wasn't until she actually met Leanne
yes.
and found out what she was about. Because at first she thought she was going to have to play this conservative Christian woman, and she didn't think she could do that. She didn't think that would fit her own persona well enough that she could actually draw from her experience and, you know, play all the things that she had to play. But after she met her, she finally realized why it was they had such a difficult time casting that particular part. In Sandra's words, Leanne Toohey is a force of nature.
Yes, I remember, I think I saw that interview as well.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, she was overwhelmed, but she understood her a little better. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when she saw that one, she said, oh, okay, I can play this character.
Yes.
And I remember, I can't remember what Mr. Toohey's first name is, but I remember his reaction the first time he saw Leanne and Sandra on the set at the same time. He said, it was scary. He said, it's enough to deal with one Leanne in this world, but two was overwhelming.
Yeah.
And there's this really cool camera shot I remember seeing, probably from that same interview, Ioana, where Sandra finishes a scene. She walks off the set. And as she passes Leanne, they high-five each other.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember that. That's right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, definitely a big LOA film on that one.
Yep.
So, hey, we're about 3 minutes over what we should be for the first half. So why don't we take a break, and afterward, let's pick up on some more of the films we have on our list and find out all the different ways they're affected by and playing a role in the promotion of the Law of Attraction. Sound good?
Yes. Sounds great.
All right. All right. This is LOA Today here on PRN, and we'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt and Ioana and Mark here on this Thursday, January 22nd, talking about the Law of Attraction in the movies. And we've talked about a few movies where the Law of Attraction plays a rather substantial role, but they are only a handful among a much larger list. What one should we draw on next? Do you want to pick another movie that's on your list that's a good example?
Well, Mark and I were he was just looking at my list, and I had The Matrix on there, and he says to me, how is The Matrix LOA? And I said, you are the one who explained The Matrix to me. You don't know that The Matrix is LOA.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love The Matrix. It makes me feel powerful when I watch it.
Right. And so when I first saw it, I didn't understand it. And he explained it to me. And then I realized, oh, my goodness, it's LOA. Because LOA is based on this idea that there is this force in the universe by which you are attracting things to you. Your thoughts is what is operates on based on these principles that you can't see or you can't touch. It's immaterial. It's supernatural. And I feel like that's what all The Matrix is about.
Well, that's true. And that's true. The main character, too, is sort of like in the Apollo 13 and Martin Luther King's. He has a goal as well.
Yes.
He believes that he can bring peace to this war that's been going on for centuries or whatever it is, for ages. That's true.
Right, and it starts with a new perspective.
And that new perspective comes from this supernatural
like
experience, which is really, in The Matrix, it's discovering that what he thought was reality really wasn't reality, that it's actually more of a dream world, and once he experiences the true reality, he discovers his power.
And that to me is what LOA is all about. That's why when he explained The Matrix to me, it became one of my favorite movies too. I didn't like it before. Because I didn't understand what it was about. But then when I understood it, I realized that that's what LOA is, realizing that what I see is such a small part of what's happening to me. You know, I think I gain success by working hard. And no, but it starts with my thoughts. And that's so much more powerful if I can channel my thoughts in the right direction. That's much more powerful than any thing that I can do in the natural world. And so that's when I began to understand, and I realized, just like in that in the Matrix, they were teaching him how to bend the spoon and that kind of stuff.
Right.
I was understanding, oh, I can control my world by my thoughts, you know, not necessarily bending spoon, but control what I attract into my life and what I attract into my experience. So I realized that, you know, that the subconscious is where the true power, the answers, the whole mystery is in the subconscious. And so then the Matrix became like, oh, I get it now.
So I think we can honestly say at this point that at the beginning you would have taken the blue pill, but now you would wholeheartedly take the red pill.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course I wouldn't have taken any pill. Anyway. But now I will definitely take the red pill. But yeah, the Matrix, I think, is a great, you know, one that, you know, and in fact, I believe that the creators, the writers, the producers are secret or closet LOA practitioners.
There are a number of themes and underlying subplot story type things going on, Law of Attraction being one of them. A lot of freedom themes going on there. A lot of conspiracy theory themes going on. It's got a lot of stuff packed into that movie. It's really something.
Yeah.
So, okay, The Matrix is on our list. What else is on our list?
We were talking about Life is Beautiful. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that. Tell us about it without giving us too much of a spoiler.
Okay, well, he's an Italian Jew, Jewish Italian, something like that. But anyways, it's based on the what do you call those things where they were sending the Jews during the pogroms?
Concentration camp.
Yes. He and his son get sent to this concentration camp, and his son, who's like 6-7 years old, doesn't understand what's happening. So his dad makes up this entire fantasy.
Is it dad or grandpa?
I think it says dad.
It's dad. Okay.
Anyways, he makes up this whole story that he convinces his son about what is happening. And he gets the others in the concentration camp, the ones who are sharing his cabin or whatever, to join him. So the son thinks like they're on a vacation and everything's great and life is beautiful, hence the name of the movie. And so the movie is all about him doing all of these different things to try and make it seem, you know, that what's happening is not really happening. And so I think that's a great LOA movie because, you know, sometimes we have to actually convince ourselves that what's happening is not really happening in an effort to hold on to whatever the objective is we're trying to achieve.
Yeah,
that's a different spin on it.
That's a huge LOA thing, in my opinion. I agree with you. Because it's so easy, and in fact we do it all the time, it's so easy to just fall into the default trap of reacting to whatever's going on around us and assume that's all that there is and all that there can be. When
right.
In fact, if we can find a way, and I'll grant you this is not an easy thing to do necessarily, but if we can find a way to convince our inner mind that other stuff is going on than what's going on around us, if we can actually picture it and visualize it and play with it and turn it into stories and stuff like that, then we actually make it possible for that thing to emerge into this reality in a way that it would not have otherwise emerged. That's a rather startling precept.
Yes, absolutely. And it's kind of it's more common in the movies than we realized. You know, I was thinking of this movie that I saw and I really liked. I wrote down the name and I can't remember it now. What is it called? But anyways, it stars Angelina Jolie, and it's about this group of assassins. And they're recruiting this guy who works, he's a regular office worker, but he suffers from an anxiety disorder, which he's taking medication for. And they get to him, they tell him that he's the son of one of the members of this group of assassins, and they're all highly skilled assassins with really special powers. And they tell him that he has inherited some of his father's abilities, and that is manifesting in his life as these anxieties. And so his life, you know, he works for a terrible boss, his girlfriend is cheating on him, he has financial issues, and every time he's confronted with these things, he gets a panic attack, you know. And what they're saying, they explain to him is that really, you have these special skills that when you feel threat or danger, that your heart rate increases, adrenaline increases, your vision and your focus, all of those things, all those powers are heightened. And that's exactly the type of skill you need to be an assassin. Now, the moral of the story is kind of questionable because they kill people who kill people. So, but anyway, the point is that they actually convinced him that he does not have an anxiety disorder problem. But really, the anxieties that he's experiencing is a manifestation of his special skills. And I really like that because, you know, sometimes I get anxious about things and I try to think, okay, these are my special powers coming to light here. Okay, what's happening?
So using the movie as a way to motivate yourself to develop your own powers.
Yes, but in general as a way to have a different perspective on things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really like that whole idea. Just kind of gives you, because so, you know, we were talking last week about the programming. Our programmed response to everything is so negative and fearful and, you know, anxiety producing.
Disempowering.
Yes, and disempowering. And if we could learn to just to change our perspective in small but very significant ways, it could make a difference in the way we experience our world.
I think you're right. And in fact, we've mentioned a number of films in the last few minutes here where it isn't all positive. There's a lot of negative stuff that goes on. There's violence that goes on and action sequences and all that kind of thing. One movie that fits into that overall genre very well, and we would not normally think of it as being positive, but it does have this one positive theme that's parallel to what you're talking about. It's actually three movies. It's the Bourne movies, the Bourne Identity, Bourne Legacy, and all that.
Yes.
And the LOA theme there is, despite the fact that this guy, this poor guy, has been completely programmed to be somebody else so that he can kill at the whim of the U.S. government, and then after the government is done with him, they're going to kill him and his fellow victims off.
Right.
He manages to somehow fight through to find his own identity. And, yeah. and he is more fixated on that than almost any other character I can think of in the movies. And he ultimately ends up finding his way out. Now, of course, he has to go through horrors to get there, and that's mm-hmm. what makes these films difficult to watch. But nevertheless, there is that one very strong thread in all three of the Bourne movies that, you know, this guy is going to overcome despite every single aspect of society being against him.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking, I had like an aha moment, as Oprah would say.
I'm sorry, aha.
Aha, yes. No, but we were talking last week and now about the programming and how that can be so difficult and to overcome and how it can be so destructive. And we've all, you know, suffered the consequences of our programming.
Sure.
But at the same time, we know of people for whom that programming is powerful in a good way. You know, we think about professional athletes and others who are just at the top of their game or skill or career, whatever it is. They have used the same programming that you and I have. To train themselves. And just like in the Bourne Identity, you know, he was trained to be a killer, and it was those same skills that he was able to turn around and use to save his own life, basically.
Essentially,
and with us, we have, you know, we have this capacity of our brain to form habits and to discover patterns and you know, our brain is this amazing organ. And of course, you know, we've been, because of our training, our upbringing, whatever, it's been misused or mistrained, for want of a better word. But if we can learn the secrets of how our brain works, then we can have access to some very, very powerful resources in our quest to change, to improve our lives. So that makes me feel good.
Well, that's good. I'm glad it makes you feel good.
Yes.
And in fact, what you're describing is something I can really identify with, because particularly lately, I've noticed I have been attracting a number of negatives into my life, and that's been true for quite some time. Especially in the last few days, a lot of them were manifesting. And mm-hmm. I was using it as an opportunity to push myself. Every time one of them came along, find a way to turn it into a positive.
Yes.
No matter how bad it was. And some of them have been pretty bad. But yeah. I've just been focused on that. And I can't say it was easy. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been easy. And I can't say I succeeded every time, because I didn't. But I did succeed a lot more than I have in the past.
Yeah.
And as a result, I've come through a period of 3 or 4 days that were very stressful, mm-hmm. very difficult. And I've done so with what I would describe as minimal damage to my psyche, because I did succeed many times in turning negatives into positives, even though it was exceedingly painful to do so. And yeah. I wasn't going through anywhere near the pain that the Border Identity was going through, or that
right.
you know, the Shawshank Redemption or any of these other guys were going through.
Yeah.
You know, mine was very mild and meager compared to any of that kind of stuff. But nevertheless, those mm-hmm. kinds of daily stresses that we deal with that are particularly negative, they can seem overwhelming to deal with. So when you actually get yourself to a point where you manage to turn them into positives like 80% of the time, that feels like quite an accomplishment.
Yes.
It's not an accomplishment they're going to make a movie out of, but it certainly is important in my life.
It's very important. And the good news is that the more difficult they seem, the more effective they are. In terms of the more difficult the experience is, the bigger your accomplishment. It's kind of like using the analogy of a physical endurance test or exercising, running a race. You know, the more you challenge yourself, the harder it is to go through the exercise, the stronger you come out on the other side. It's like lifting weights. You know, of course, the harder, the heavier the weights, the greater the strain on your muscle. But in lifting those weights, of course, yes, you're going to do some damage to your muscles sometimes, because you do tear their muscles. But then those little tears in the muscles are what, when they're repaired, make your muscles bigger and stronger. So the more difficult the challenge, you realize the stronger you are becoming as a person as you overcome them. So congratulations.
So you're basically saying I'm becoming a muscle head.
In a metaphysical sense. But you were sharing a similar experience, Mark, about this week. You were saying to me that you were paying more attention to your mood, and you realized that it was more.
Oh well, yeah, that was an awareness thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I suppose that's just a measure of advancement when you do manage to step up to happier, more joyful, more optimistic, more positive thinking. A certain time may go by, but for me it went by before. I realized, looking back, I could see the way I used to think, and then sometimes currently I'll slip back into that momentarily, and I'll notice it. I'll notice it happening, whereas before I didn't. It was just, this is just life. I don't understand, you know. But now I can see that, I realized that I was being more negative more often than I realized.
Yes.
I guess that's it.
Yes, you realize.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
I think I came across just fine.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think anytime that kind of a breakthrough happens, it's amazing. Because, you know, one of my heroes in this whole law of attraction way is Dr. Deepak Chopra. And his key word underlined everything, all his books, all his writings, all his teachings. He just talks about awareness, and he says basically, if he can get people to be aware of their thought patterns, aware of their programming, aware of their default thinking, then he feels like, you know, the hard part is done. The awareness is the beginning, is the change in the direction. It's going from life, from death to life, from sickness to healing. It's like a whole new world has opened up if you can become aware of you know, the things that you previously weren't aware of, you know. And that awareness is like a point of power, almost. Not almost, it is.
Yeah, it's true. It is. It is a point of power, because once you're aware, then immediately
you're ready for the next step.
Yes.
Because, oh my gosh, I didn't realize this, and now that I do, I don't want to stay this way.
Well, all this brings to mind conversations we had 2 to 3 shows back. 2 weeks in a row, we talked about your cruise and about how you guys are in the vortex and how you kind of reached a mental, emotional peak in that sense, and so everything was just going swimmingly well. Looking back at that period from this point in time, first of all, are you still in the vortex, and what more have you learned from the experience of being in the vortex?
Yeah, we're still in the vortex. What more have we learned? We learned that we still have programming to overcome, even in the vortex, you know? Yeah, because now we're taking on new challenges, and, you know, always with new challenges, the programming wants to get back in there and say, well, yeah, you did that, but that doesn't mean you can do this, you know? You know, that kind of thinking, yeah. So.
Put those limitations back in place again. This I know, is getting uncomfortable.
Exactly. It's like, these are your friends, remember? Yeah, so, but like I was sharing with you, we recognize it as growth, and growth is never, you know, easy, because you're going against the current, you're swimming against the tide, and that's how you get bigger and stronger and more, what is it, efficient, successful?
Yeah, resilient, powerful.
That's it, resilient, yeah. So the growing pains are necessary, but now I embrace them, as opposed to before I would have shied away from them, tried to avoid them, or pity myself for having to go through them, but now I embrace them because I realize that on the other side of those painful experiences is a stronger, more powerful me.
And now that you're in the vortex and have been for quite some time, isn't it true that actually the battle or the struggle or whatever it is that you want to call it that we are used to going through throughout our entire lives has become less?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes,
definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the quickest way I can say that is that when the tendency to slip back into old ways of thinking starts to happen, you recognize it sooner, you can get out of it sooner, and you have the faith to push through it more strongly because you've already been through it.
Yes.
And so going through it again is not as painful or as difficult. And it ends faster.
That's the most beautiful thing. It ends quicker.
Yeah.
Because I was sharing with Mark, I remember the time when you could, you know, one bad thing would happen and you would just wallow in it, and then another thing, and before you know it, it's days and weeks of month of just downhill, icky, mucky feelings, you know? But now I'm becoming a pro at snapping out of it. Oh my goodness. I think it may be driving Mark crazy, but you know, I can go from why is this not working to, oh my god, life is so amazing in like minutes.
0 to 60 in 25 seconds.
Right. Yes, and it's something that I've consciously worked on, you know, because I realize how it's so effective.
Well, there's no doubt that it's effective, and it's a tremendous skill to have to be able to make that kind of shift.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that you guys have gotten into this zone is fantastic, and I feel like I'm getting closer, Louise and I are getting closer, and I'm really looking forward to the time when we can join you there. And I wonder, as we do these broadcasts, where our audience is on this whole scale, because everybody's at a different place. So some people have tremendous trials they're dealing with, others less so. Some perhaps are actually already in the vortex. Others are in the negative vortex. And obviously, there's really no good way for us to know it, other than, you know, if somebody decides to write in or something, which we encourage people to do. You know, by all means, if you want to write into the show, you can write to me. My email is walt@loatoday.net, and, you know, I'll be glad to share what you have to say on the show. But I've wondered about that. I've wondered about the people who listen and what their state of mind is, their state of life is. So I guess that's all I'll preface to saying I'm glad that you're able to share your experience of what it's like to be in the zone, because I think it's going to help everybody regardless of where they are on that path.
Yeah, and I too do wonder, because sometimes we talk about LOA as LOA without, you know, saying law of attraction or what that means, you know, and the whole idea of conscious creation and what it's all about. And I feel like we use a lot of cliches, and maybe for some people who are new to the ideas and the concepts, they may not understand. And so, like you said, if they have questions, you know, we'd love to hear, you know, some of those questions and be able to answer them, because, you know, they may have a question that's a question for not just them, but other people. So in answering their question, we may answer other people's questions as well. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
And once again, that email address, Walt, W-A-L-T, at loatoday.net. So, okay, we've got about 3 minutes left before we have to sign off for this week, but it's been a fun discussion about the movies. Let's bring in one more movie. Mark, you got a favorite movie you want to bring in?
Let's see. You told me about that.
Yeah,
with the Star Trek movies. I love Star Trek. Is that a strong LOA theme?
Can't say I can really think of one, but there probably is one.
Yeah, because when I was doing the research online, a lot of the Star Trek fans were saying that there was a lot of LOA in it. I hadn't seen any of the movies, so I couldn't really talk about that.
Well, to be fair, Star Trek fans will tell you that anything is a
Yeah, it's probably that's true, but there was the thing with Yoda and the whole...
Oh, Star Wars.
Okay, both Star Trek and Star Wars.
Star Wars has an LOA theme, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Star Wars has a strong metaphysical element to it with the Force and all that.
Okay.
And yes, there's an LOA theme with, again, some amazing goal. You know, the galaxy is under the yoke of the Empire, and there's this small group of rebels that want to break that yoke and take down the Empire, which seems, you know, ridiculously impossible. But that's what the whole movie's about, and they eventually achieve their goal.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. The Force is with us. I believe that.
The Force will be with you always, Luke.
Always. Absolutely.
Well, this has been great. We've only got about half a minute left, so we probably don't have time to go into another movie. But thanks for sharing your insights about your favorite movies. And I've shared some of mine. And if any of our audience want to send some of theirs in, we'd be happy to mention those, even if we're talking about another topic on another show. And I guess we'll just leave it at that. So thanks again, Mark and Yuona, for joining me today.
This was fun. Yeah, we have to do this movie thing again.
We love that. Yeah.
Yes.
We'll definitely schedule it then for a future show. And we'll welcome you all back next time for LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Offense to you, don't waste your time.